Now, time for a catch up on stories making headlines across the world on this week's World Report with Sharon Lynch.
Good morning. On today's programme, is British Columbia's decision to decriminalise the possession of certain drugs working? And locals and traders in the UK city of York claim hen parties are ruining the city. But first we go to the Czech Republic, where traditional village pubs are turning off their taps as customers have increasingly turned to drinking at home. From the Czech capital Prague, Rob Cameron reports.
It's one of my favourite activities. Actually, it's two of them, having a beer in a country pub and then going for a walk. Or, if I want to mix things up a bit, going for a country walk and then having a beer. Sometimes I even have a beer, then go for a walk, and then have another beer. Anyway, enough about me and my exciting pastimes. Back to the pubs. This latest study by Pilsner Urquell, the brewery that brought you, well, every lager in the world, makes for sobering reading, if you'll excuse the pun. More than 1,300 rural Czech pubs and restaurants have disappeared in the past 4 years, 250 of them last year alone. And in case you're wondering, in most cases the phrase pubs and restaurants is rather redundant. The vast majority of Czech pubs serve food, and in most cases a restaurant, at least in the country, is simply a room with a bar on one side and a TV on the other. If you're peckish, there'll be a fake leather-bound menu featuring perhaps 8 dishes. The first 4 of these dishes will be goulash and dumplings, beef sirloin and cream sauce, fried cheese and chips, and pork neck with potato croquettes, and then 4 more. I'm not being snide, I love all of these dishes, but there is a certain predictability to the menu in a Czech country pub, or restaurant, insert whichever word you're comfortable with. They provide restoration, and usually dumplings, to soak up the beer. But I digress, back to the study. In March 2019, when COVID was a word only a few people in white coats were familiar with, there were 8,929 country pubs in the Czech Republic. Today, there are just 7,604. There's also been a fall in the number of pubs nationwide, i.e. those in towns and cities too, from 25,000 to 22,000. But overall, the figures for the gastronomy industry appear to be healthy, partly because of a leap in demand for new cafes, bistros and cocktail bars in urban areas, and partly because pubs and restaurants in city centres are still doing a roaring trade. Experts say in villages, what for decades was a focal point, the local boozer, is fast losing its status as increasing numbers of country drinkers stay home, opting to sip at cans bought for a fraction of the price in the supermarket. There's no future in village pubs, say those acquainted with the problem. It's a guaranteed way to lose money, especially when energy prices to heat and light them are so high. And so once they close their doors, finding someone else to reopen them is usually tricky. This is all rather sad, as stopping for a pint of frothy Czech lager after walking through sun-dappled glades and over mountain passes is part of the Czech experience. But then again, that's the experience of the occasional out-of-town patron, rather than the table of regulars whiling away the hours that keeps the country pub in business. If they're no longer willing to stump up the cash for a glass of the good stuff, it's hard to see how country pubs in the Czech Republic can be anything more than welcome refreshment stops for thirsty tourists. For World Report, this is Rob Cameron in Prague.
To Canada next, and on the 31st of January this year, British Columbia decriminalised the possession of small amounts of certain drugs, including cocaine, heroin and fentanyl. While these substances will remain illegal, adults possessing less than 2.5 grams for personal use no longer face arrest, charges or the seizure of their drugs. Instead, police will offer information on health and social supports and help with referrals as requested. requested. Some criticised the province's three-year pilot project as a half measure, while others have applauded the pilot as an important first step. From Vancouver, Connor Power reports.
Few cities I've seen are as instantly appealing as Vancouver, capital of British Columbia, Canada. It has all the allure of a classic North American city, with its glittering copse of skyscrapers set amidst a stunning background of snow-capped peaks and a wide, sheltered bay opening out onto the Pacific Ocean. In surveys of the most appealing cities in the world to live, Vancouver regularly comes in at the top end of the charts. A wonderful city it certainly is, but utopia it is not. Like everywhere else in the world, it has its share of problems, and one problem that the city has grappled with for many decades is that of illegal narcotics. Since 2017, all of Canada has fully legalized the use and sale of cannabis, and since January 31st of this year, the province of British Columbia has taken a bold step forwards in legalizing the consumption of all drugs, up to and including heroin. It's an experiment with conditions, and it's due to last just 3 years in an effort to combat the sharp rise in overdose deaths associated with the synthetic drug fentanyl. Early on a sunny Sunday morning, I took a tour around the city by bike. I had been told by friends and former Vancouver residents that an area at the eastern end of East Hastings Street was a part of town which historically had a seedy reputation, and where today you'd openly see a lot of drug abuse. If certain scenes that I've come across in Dublin, for example, were shocking, then there was nothing to prepare me for the scenes of East Hastings Street on an early summer morning. Block after block presented boarded-up premises and streets populated by individuals, alone or in social groups, on the side of the street or even seated at outdoor tables. From a distance, it looked like the immediate aftermath of a nightclub having disgorged its revellers out onto the streets. But up close, it was the stuff of a post-apocalyptic nightmare, complete with its grisly cast of desperate and distressed people stumbling around like zombies. Vancouver has a long history with hardcore drug use, and it has always taken a progressive stance. Back in 1959, it was here that the world's first methadone maintenance treatment program began, an initiative that has since been taken up in various other large urban centers around the world. Their latest initiative, adopted by the province of British Columbia but mainly centered on the east downtown area of Vancouver, builds upon a supervised and contained drug consumption site that has been more or less in practice for the last 20 years or so. Another idea that has been copied in many cities across North America. The introduction of fentanyl into the illicit drugs market has caused an alarming spike in overdose deaths in recent years. In British Columbia alone, over 11,000 people have died of overdose since 2016. But just how well is this initiative working? 3 months into the plan, and on the evidence of what one witnesses on East Hastings, it certainly does not look pleasant. Recently retired former Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart was instrumental in introducing this latest chapter to the city's story of drug abuse. He says that the move to recognize drug abuse more as a public health matter and less as a criminal matter is the right way to go. It moves us away from the war on drugs approach to saving lives, he says, and I think that's an important part of getting police further out of the lives of folks that are living with addiction. The drug users have their own representative organization, the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, or VANDU, founded a quarter of a century ago to bring together groups of people who use drugs. VANDU is dedicated to improving the lives of drug users, their families, and their communities. David Hamm, a member of the board of directors of VANDU, says that they have been lobbying for this move since the foundation of VANDU 25 years ago. It's a move in the right direction, he says, but the measures are woefully inadequate. The personal limit, for example, of 2.5 grams of the collective amount of proscribed substances should be replaced by a more realistic amount of 4.5 grams for each substance. The resources used in this decriminalization project would, he says, have been better utilized in saving drug users from what he refers to as the really toxic supply out there. As if to underline this point, only 2 weeks ago, police arrested a man who opened up a pop-up retail drugs truck in the area of East Hastings Street for breaching the conditions of the pilot plan. He, however, argued that he was simply ensuring that drug users could get a safe supply of drugs. And thus, the great Canadian drugs debate continues. For RTE World Report in Vancouver, Canada, this is Connor Power.
And finally, York in the north of England is one of the country's most popular destinations for hen and stag parties. But locals fear the atmosphere in the medieval city is being ruined by partygoers. York has tried to deter these kind of visitors as well as control them. But it seems efforts to keep the stag and hen parties away are actually encouraging more of them. From London, Russell Padmore reports.
I live in one of the world's famous cities with globally renowned attractions from museums to art galleries and, of course, London's famous nightclubs. But when it comes to a party to celebrate a forthcoming wedding, the English capital is overshadowed by York. That city dates back to the days of the Roman Empire. The Saxons settled there and Vikings invaded the city. But these days, the unwelcome invaders wandering down the medieval streets past York Minster are likely to be in a hen or stag party. It's one of the top destinations. Just look online to see how many companies will organise one. Activities include a pub crawl with women known as beer babes, and you can jump the nightclub queues. York's reputation as a tourist destination has taken a battering because of the disorder. Reports of young people urinating, vomiting and fighting in the streets have made the city centre a no-go area for families. The loss of trade has prompted businesses to call for action. And the local Member of Parliament, Rachel Maskell, said residents feel their city has been stolen from them by antisocial behaviour. The city published a guide hoping to achieve more moderate behaviour. It includes encouraging groups to book restaurant tables, hoping that eating more will reduce consumption of alcohol. The rise in short-term holiday bookings for Airbnb properties has been followed by residents reporting how drunken behaviour has moved to their neighbourhoods. It's estimated York has more than 2,000 properties listed as short-term rentals. Meanwhile, more than 1,000 people are on the council waiting list for a home. Rebecca Hill from Indie York, which represents independent businesses, says not every hen and stag party is full of drunk people, but most of the money spent ends up with outlets of a national chain. Last year, police officers in York City Centre were given extra powers to combat alcohol-related antisocial behaviour. But the efforts to clamp down on stag and hen parties have only made more people determined to visit and defy the restrictions. Matt Mavier, the boss of the party organiser Last Night of Freedom, says efforts to deter visitors are backfiring and bookings are up almost 100% on last year. If you tell people no, they just want it more, he says. Edinburgh is popular with hen and stag parties, but there may be a cultural shift in the way people celebrate in Scotland. According to Leslie Henderson, who organises hen parties, brides-to-be want a more memorable occasion. She says boozing is no longer fashionable, and bookings this year include roller discos and brunches. For many years, Temple Bar in Dublin was renowned for bachelor parties with intoxicated British visitors. Party organisers still describe it as Europe's booziest city. Perhaps an unfair label when you compare Dublin with Amsterdam, famous for its red light district and legalised cannabis. But the Dutch city has had enough of antisocial behaviour by British men and is telling them to stay away. Amsterdam is using the internet to deter nuisance visitors. Online searches for phrases like stag party Amsterdam would trigger a video warning of the consequences of drinking and taking drugs. The deputy mayor of the Dutch city, Sofiane Mbaki, says visitors are still welcome, but not if they misbehave. Cities like Amsterdam, Dublin, Edinburgh and York, which depend on tourism, want to deter unruly visitors while avoiding getting a reputation for disorder. They may be watching the clampdown in Malaga, where the Spanish authorities are issuing fines of €750 to anyone who is unruly, which includes people only dressed in their underwear. There may be a solution, though, from an unexpected source: the cost of living crisis and surging inflation. Hen and stag parties can be expensive, and soaring costs of accommodation and alcoholic drinks might lead to a scaled-down celebration, which would probably mean fewer incidents of disorder. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
That's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Sharon Lynch, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.